Welcome to Anas Podcast with me, Rida Alwan.
And me, Naba Al-Madani. We are delighted to welcome a truly inspiring guest to today's episode, a self-taught British Iraqi chef and founder of Jum'a Kitchen.
Before discovering the true passion for food, he spent several years in the financial industry. He changed his spreadsheets for spices, and he launched his own kitchen in Borough Market. A chef who has made his mission to bring Iraqi food and Iraqi cuisine to London. Welcome, Philip.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me, guys.
How are you?
I'm good. Finally, we made this happen.
Yes.
It took a while.
It did.
How are you feeling?
I'm in a good place. It's been a rocky year, but I'm here. And really lovely to spend time with you today.
So as we know, Philip, you've got this phenomenal, I'd like to call it a restaurant, but it's not. What do you classify it as?
It's my baby. I don't know what to say. It's like been my baby for 10 years plus. It's a takeaway restaurant within Borough Market, but also it's just way more than that. It's way more than that from a business point of view. We obviously do catering events, do my private chefing, but also like what the brand is for other people. Like that's probably the biggest thing. That hits home, and it's something beyond my wildest dreams that I didn't realize it would become this for so many people. And it's our identity. It's our stamp in a food scene that is not representing Iraqi cuisine, but also from a place of identity and a voice for the voiceless, you know, and especially in current times now with everything going on in the Middle East, like it's more important than ever that we're on the front line and we're shouting our voices loud and clear, because if not, the Western narratives will win and we can't have that.
Well done to you. Thank you, actually. I think I want to start by saying thank you. Thank you for putting the Iraqi food on the map again, because I think it doesn't get enough attention. And our food is absolutely amazing. It's very rich. Lots of history.
Absolutely.
Right? Goes back all the way, can we say 7,000 years?
Yeah.
Like Sumerian time, yeah. Mesopotamia. And so to actually now see it on the streets of London, it's absolutely amazing. And you made it happen. So to start off, I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you.
And well done, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure for you it's taken its time, but it's now there, and you've achieved things that people thought, Iraqi food, what Iraqi food?
No, for but sure.
And now it's on the map.
My dad included, what Iraqi food? What are you doing? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and now it's a lovely feeling. Thank you for the acknowledgement, because it has been an unbelievable journey, a very tough one at times, and I couldn't be prouder.
Leaving the financial industry to join catering or restauranting or food in general, that must have been a decision.
Yeah, it was very tough. I worked through the financial crisis in 2009. So it was a very, very tough chapter to even be in finance. But I look back and it was kind of, I was 30, 28, 29, going into 30s. My friends around me, a lot of them were settling down. You know, they were buying their houses, you know, getting married. And I'm on a whole different page of life where I haven't sorted myself out. I'm not aligned with what I want to do. And that alignment, I always felt like was really important. I wanted to enjoy what I did in life, and finance wasn't doing that for me. Yes, it was a paycheck, but it wasn't fulfillment. I wasn't getting out of bed like happy. And obviously, like sharing that with my parents, they're just like, no, you're working to put money on the table. You're not out here to enjoy work. Like it's there to just provide. That's it. And I didn't have that mindset. And food was always like a nice distraction, but it wasn't like I wasn't looking at myself as any kind of chef or anything like that. I was just doing it a little bit on the side. And I just kind of like fueled the fire, shall we say, and started working in restaurants at my weekends. I used to take holiday And during that holiday, I'd work in different restaurants across London.
This is whilst you were in finance?
Yeah, whilst I was in finance and transitioning, because I left finance and I worked for an energy consultancy firm.
Okay.
And again, that's when I had that time and used my holiday wisely to gain experience and to just see like, what is this something for me? And every time I couldn't get enough, I was loving it. And the day came where I was like, Dad, I'm leaving finance and this is what I want to do. And he turned to me disgusted and he was like, you're leaving finance to go and become a dishwasher.
Typical Iraqi dad.
Literally, right? And I'm just like, all right. And I had to suck it up and I had to take the I'm not going to swear on here, but I had to take it from him and everyone else because everyone was against the idea. Mm. And
when you say everyone, who are we like?
Well, mum, dad, brother, like they kind of saw me as lost.
Okay.
You know, and it's hard. It's hard to actually.
Was there any encouragement from anyone else?
I wouldn't say at the beginning it was welcomed because I was not in a good place within myself. Okay. You know, if you're waking up every day and you're not happy going to work, like mum, family, they're going to know something's up with Philip. So there was a concern. And then I've got this like new idea of like, okay, I'm going to go into catering. I'm going to go into food. I'm going to restaurants. That's like, well, what are you doing? So I think it was, and look, like if my mum's listening to this, she might be disappointed with what I'm saying. Like, so my mum has backed me since day one, but it's more just, they want the best for their kids, right? They want the best for me. And they didn't see it as a probably a good idea. And I'm starting from the ground. I hadn't had any experience. I knew how to eat it. I didn't know how to cook it, you know? And that was the start of the journey. And then it was just this real, it was like two, three years actually of like learning my craft and understanding restaurant life, understanding. And, you know, any time I was working in restaurants, I would then, and this is just normal restaurants. This is like pub food. This is some Michelin starred restaurants. This is, you know.
So you had a variety.
Yeah, like a real mix. Any experience I could get, any friends I had in kitchens, I was like, let me come and work there. But all the while I was kind of coming out of that and thinking, how can I inject that into the Iraqi classics? Mm. How can I refine that?
Wait, just for our listeners, were you volunteering because you wanted to learn the trade? Where you get paid?
All free, yeah, all stages. So I was again, like, we should probably highlight the financial. Like, I was not in a good financial place probably up until like 35.
Okay.
Like 35, 36, which is a bit crazy when you think about it, you know.
Yeah.
When again, like, you've got your friends and your peers and people around you who are, you're observing them, they've stayed in finance, they're killing it now. But then when you actually chat to them, they're not happy. Mm. And they're looking at me like, you're smashing it, Phil. Like, I've seen you from day, you know, from 6 years ago, like watching it grow. And I'm like, I'm not really. I'm not smashing. So it's always this, grass is always greener. But deep, deep down, it was like I was happy. And I was doing something that was, yeah, it was special. It was special and it was growing all the time. And touching the hearts of so many people like that. And that was the real big push every time when I was having my real low moments where I wanted to like pack it all in and I'm actually not making any money. I'm not doing well. Why am I doing this? And then it was like the reaction of the people would always, the Iraqis, that would give me like drive to be, yalla, keep going, which was special.
Yes. And you've come this far. That's amazing. Well done. So if I take you back to that conversation you've had with your father,
mm-hmm.
that day when he came home and he said, you know, I'm packing everything up and I'm going to look into food.
Mm-hmm.
What was that conversation like?
It was.
How long did it take you to get yourself to say this to your dad?
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough. It was very daunting because my dad doesn't play around with his words. And, you know, like similar probably Iraqi dads out there. People can relate.
No filters.
Yeah, he says it how it is. And I think It's quite funny because even when I've observed my dad, when I go to restaurants with my dad, mm-hmm. I see how he talks to people. I see how he talks to the staff, and it triggers the F out of me because it is this like hierarchical thing of like, I'm up here and you're here, you know, you're here to serve me. Mm. And I think that goes back to when they had their homes and, you know, in Iraq, there was helpers, there was, you know, all sorts. So there was probably a layer where he was like, my son is going to be a dishwasher. Like in his head, that's what it translated. He is going to be like a slave, or he's going to be like, you know, a nobody.
I guess in Iraq, there is like a class structure.
For real.
So it's that mentality of he's not part of that class anymore. He's now
going down
a class, and is just trying to absorb that information for him. Is
yeah, it was a lot.
What it means to him, what it means to him, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, and I know they have their pride, and they have the family name, and they have, you know, all these things that I'm so against. I'm not part of it. I'm against it. I'm just not part of it. I didn't grow up like that. And for me, everyone's equal. And like, my love for hospitality, if I'm ever in a restaurant or ever see someone serving me, I'm so grateful. I'm so appreciative. But that's like the opposite to my dad. He doesn't even see them.
Just for the viewers, you were born here?
Born and bred Londoner. And dad Iraqi, mum English-Irish. So I had like a nice mix of cultures growing up.
And when did dad come here?
Dad came here in 71. He went back for military service and then came, that was it. He was like done, 73. He stayed and never looked back and never went back, doesn't want to go back. His relationship with Iraq, which I'm sure we'll come on to later. Done. Chapter closed when he left. That was that. You know, it's quite sad, really. And he obviously observed through the television his country just being massacred. So, and that's something I can never relate to, you know. I only saw it through as a small child, just seeing him shout at the TV, seeing him throw his slipper at the TV, you know, like this is real stuff, you know what I mean? Like that I saw and colourful language that I'm sure we can all relate to, you know, because it was just so raw and so tough for them to probably witness it, and especially of the Iraq that once was, because it's just the stories are so special when you think and hear about it back in the day, 60s, 70s,
back in the heydays,
right? It's just like a melting pot of just ahead of its time as well. The Dubai of what, you know, what we see Dubai now, that Iraq, you know, was just way ahead.
Yeah, and you look at these pictures with like the double decker bus.
Yeah.
You know, and the hop on, hop offs, you know, back in the early 80s. You know,
the dress sense as well.
The suits, all suited and booted.
How dapper everyone was. It was just like
three-piece suit. I remember my granddad until his later life, he was always in a three-piece suit. And he had to have custom fitted. Mm. And then he knew all the custom fitters in London as well. And it was just that mentality of, you know, no, if you're going to go out, you've got to represent, you've got to look the part. Mm. I mean, there's one thing that my granddad told me when I was younger. He goes, if you're early to an appointment, you're an hour early. If you're on time to an appointment, you're 15 minutes early. If you're on time, it means you're late. And if you're late, he goes, you're not going to see me. It was as simple as that. There was no mobiles back then.
That's right.
So it was like, if you've come on time, he goes, 1 second passes, I'm walking off. Wow. That's it. He goes, he had a time structure. And it's like, whereas now you talk to Iraqis and I'm like, no, fashionably late.
Hey, they're always late.
Yeah. I hate that.
I absolutely detest it. From what I heard from my granddad, it's like, no, this is our true traditional background. Yeah. Mm. Why have we changed it to become something a lot more lazier, in my opinion?
Yeah.
No, it's 100%. And you know, even like touching upon that even further, like the education, the education that they received and all of these things that we're highlighting, that is not what was represented on the television, you know, as we were growing up. And that was a sort of saddest and actually the most confusing thing, because it was like for me growing up as a, you know, that white Western blood in me, but also like I'm Iraqi too, but like, you know, I wasn't, it was confusing. Mm. I wasn't as in touch with it. And that's been another, like, one of the most amazing special things to come out of me creating Juma is how much more educated and in touch I am with the Iraqi community. Mm. And not just, you know, my own. It's like Iraqi Muslims, Iraqi Christians, Iraqi Jews. Like, I know so many now. And again, like, that's not really highlighted enough, you know, the beautiful melting pot of religions and culture in Iraq. And so it's and not to mention, like, they fight. They, like, these Iraqis, they fight with each other. So Juma was a place where they can come and just shut up and eat and put their differences aside. And, you know, like, that was, again, like, a layer of it that I didn't see until people were telling me, like, and people were coming to the pop-ups and it was like, that family don't normally speak to each other, but now they're like...
So you created a safe space for people.
I guess, which is pretty, yeah, it's lovely. It's lovely to know and to provide that, for sure.
So... Growing up, did people ask you where you're from?
Yeah, like, I remember at school, like, there was a lot of kind of, like, confusion with your surname, right?
Okay.
Where's that from? And, like, what are you? And I would just say my dad's Iraqi.
Well, you would?
I would, for sure. And, but I wouldn't say I'm Iraqi. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And that identity of myself has probably grown way more confident in saying, yeah, I'm half English, half Iraqi, or English, Irish, Iraqi, you know. But Iraqi gets mentioned, like, always now, and it's something I'm so proud of. And again, it's funny, really, because, you know, just that whole media representation of what that can do to us. You know, to play small. We end up playing small in life when really it's like we've got nothing to be ashamed of. We've got everything to be proud of, you know. Mm. And that takes time to maybe build that confidence. And again, it's not until maybe I represented that strapline under the Juma banner, like Iraqi cuisine, like, mm-hmm. again, like, what that did to people, because it wasn't Middle Eastern food. Mm. Or the Middle Eastern, the normal Middle Eastern strapline, which is a lot safer and a lot more under the radar.
Yeah.
I was like, F it, like, no, we're doing unapologetically, like, this is us. And you just, I don't know, you felt people being like, yeah, this is like, why hasn't anyone done this before? And it was like, and I think again, that maybe that mixed Philip of having both English, Irish and Iraqi in me, it had me approach it probably different to maybe other people. So yeah, there's so many, like, I guess, factors and layers to it that maybe led Juma to be that safe space for others. Because I wasn't as in touch with the community growing up. I wasn't, my dad was a black sheep. He didn't roll with, he had his set crew.
Mm-hmm.
Of his OGs, and that, like, he didn't really do, like, the
were they Iraqis as part
yeah,
of that?
Yeah, fully Iraqi. We're Christians, so, like, he had his Iraqi Christian crew, yeah. And it was like the, you know, that small little minority kind of group. And he's fallen out with them all now, by the way. Disclaimer, like, I mean, classic. But, like,
by the way, that's typical Iraqis. Right? They fall out and they fall back in. They'll fall back in at one point.
I'm like, have you heard from Yusuf? I'm not speaking to him. Oh, what's happened now? You know, but yeah, he did his thing very on a small scale. So I wasn't.
So he also cooked, or he was.
Yeah. He was. Well, my aunties were the big influence. His sisters, and but he could, you know, his biryani's like unbeatable.
Did you got some?
No, sorry, guys. Sorry, left it at home. But
next
time. Yeah, exactly. Next time for sure. But yeah, he was amazing cook. Big, obviously big source and influence to me.
Amazing. And so you said your aunties, were your aunties here as well?
One auntie was here. She's passed away a few years ago, Auntie Nadra, but the others were all, they're all scattered over the US now.
Okay.
You know, but at the time even my mum remembers when they used to come from Baghdad, She'd be in the kitchen and it'd be a complete khabsa, like just everything all over the place. And then they'd come with their suitcase, open the suitcase, basturma, gema, nuts, dates, like just filled like a whole suitcase. And again, like I've got a memory of seeing that, like, and it's like, it's just those little moments, you know, that are so special and that represent so much of what food means to us, you know.
I think it's also pretty typical from Iraqi families when they're coming back. It's like they've got to have like tahin or sweets or some frozen meat or some sort of bastorma or whatever it is, just so that you taste the true flavors of Iraq.
Yeah, it's a pride thing.
It is. It's funny you say that, because last year when I went to Iraq, I came back with a suitcase full of Iraqi goods. I brought some.
We can't help it.
Oh, we can't. Yeah. I brought some. I don't know if you've heard of tamen ambar.
Go on.
That's a very famous rice in Iraq.
Yeah, yeah. And oh yes, I've heard about this.
And it makes the best kubba.
Haleb, yes. This the rice for haleb. Yeah, I have. A woman customer gave me a bag of it.
I know that woman.
Really?
My best friend.
Wow.
Yeah, so that, I got that. I got nuts, coffee, spices. Do I say more?
Amazing. Where is it? Where's us?
Call us next time. You have to come see us again.
But so, because I was going to say, what's your favorite food? But we'll leave that for later, because there's a whole story behind that. Iraqi food, your dad and his relationship with Iraq, and then you going to Iraq.
Mm.
How did that work out?
Yeah, that was really tough. I remember I'd approached the subject like years before going, like, I really want to go, and you know, and I had I had like friends around me sort of playing it down, like, you should just go, like, what's wrong with you? Like, almost like Iraqi friends being like, who've been before and done it and got the t-shirt, shall we say, of
Christian,
breaking the ice.
Christian Iraqis?
No, just Iraqis in general. And it was like, I felt like there was something wrong with me that I wasn't biting the bullet and just booking.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, no, my dad would kill me. Like, it was like a genuine fear of like, this would not be, but obviously I'm a grown man, I'm an adult. But there's something about when you are around your dad, you're a child. You are a child again, and it's a respect thing, and it's just a, I don't know, innate thing in us. Like, when I'm around my mom, I'm a kid again. Like, you know, like, it's just the way it is. But yeah, I really cared about what he thought. And obviously this was a territory and an arena I didn't know much about, like, let's be honest. I went when I was one, obviously no recollection there. And we'll come on to that after if I can. And yeah, he was just, it was always met with just like, absolutely not, like, and then he would just get louder and louder, and he would just work himself up, and it, you know, and often like his and their reactions, I say their as in like maybe Arab parents, like they go like 0 to 100, but it's to really make a point to stamp out like, okay, this is not acceptable, I'm not having this. And I kept revisiting it, exactly the same reaction, thinking like, okay, he might cool off, but he didn't. And I said, like, I remember it was my birthday and in January. And I remember I was meant to go with a client who I cook for, but he's become a friend, and we're really good friends now. And he was going to host me. He's like, you come with me, like, everything's taken care of. And in the end, it fell through. And then someone else was like, who I was meant to meet out there in Baghdad, he was like, just come with me and my mum. Because I said to him, like, it's not happening. Like, my friend who was meant to host me, he's already there, and he's not going to be there when he's like, just this other guy, Bilal, he's like, come with me and my mum. And I was like, oh man, like, I was like, no, I can't do that. He's like, dude, like, just come and stay at our house. And the way he was talking to me, it was casual. It was like,
Adi,
nothing.
Yeah.
Adi, like, come. So I'm like, okay, let me call you back. And I'm like, literally sat on my bed. I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm doing this. And then I just remember just booking my flight there and then. And in my head, I'm just got my dad in my ear. And I'm like, okay, I need to, you know, booked it, la, la, la. Call my dad. And
you're excited as hell.
I'm nervous. I'm nervous. I'm nervous.
Okay.
And I say, dad, like, you're not going to like this, but I've booked my flight to Baghdad. I'm being looked after and being taken care of by a family who lives out there, who stay out there and have a house out there. And he didn't even shout. He was just like, I don't want to hear from you. I don't want to know. I don't want to hear from you. You're stupid. And that's that. And it was really shit, because it was just like, oh man, like, I want to share this with him. Like, this was a big thing for me now. Mm. And it was a big, and the reason why I said it was a big thing, it's like, here I am on the front line representing Iraqi cuisine, Iraqi culture. And there was probably an insecurity, not probably, there was an insecurity within me of like, I haven't even been. Mm. Like, who am I really? And there's a lot of like, you know, on my journey, there's been a lot of, again, like around my identity of like, I don't speak Arabic, you know, I've got a name, Philip, like, you know what I mean? It's like, am I Iraqi enough?
You don't, you know, have an Arabic name?
I've got, Omar's my middle Omar. Name, yeah. You know, and it's this thing of like, am I Iraqi enough? Am I the right person to represent? And should I do more? And you get lost in that whole world, like, of it all. And there was a couple of periods of the career where I was lost in it. And that's why I just wanted to just go and to see, to smell, to feel, to research, to explore my family. Like, there's a family home there, you know, there's a family home there, like, and yeah, dad just didn't want anything to do with me. And I remember, like, obviously fast forward, we go and I'm WhatsApping him, I'm still talking to him, he blanks me, that like did not say one word to me the whole trip.
No,
like, that's how raw, like, you know what I mean, that rawness, he's got this rawness
to him. How did it make you feel?
Yeah, it's just terrible, man, because it's like, this is it. I'm here. I'm in Baghdad. Like in front of me is like the main, let's say the main church. And I remember stories that the house was not far from there. Mm-hmm. He's one of 11. So it was like a big house and all of that. And I just wanted to know like where they could, they're born and bred Maslawi in Mosul, but they had a home in Baghdad where they came later. Yeah, it was just a bit, there was something missing. There was a big part of the jigsaw missing for that trip. But it was like, it is what it is. Like, and this is actually, in a way, this is perfect, because this is what it is, yeah, to be diaspora. This is what it is to be Iraqi. This is the layers and complexities of it, you know? Mm-hmm. Who am I to be angry at him? Like, this is his trauma.
Yeah, absolutely.
His beloved son is going to a land he did everything to escape from. You know what I mean? Like, it's so, but obviously times have changed and I had the best time. It was incredible. And this sort of insecurity and these things that I had, these shackles I had around me, they just disappeared. It wasn't about, am I Iraqi enough, or I need to be a certain way? I became so comfortable with me and who I am after that trip, because it was all in my head. I didn't need to be anyone, and I grew so much more confident in my cooking. You know, now if someone slates my biryani or slates my dolma or slates my any dish that I create, I don't take it personally anymore. I'm just like, all right. But before, I would like, there'd be this thing of like, oh my God, I've not done it justice. I haven't represented Iraq in the, you know, no, I can't carry that. You know, that's not, it's not for me. So it was really powerful. And
did you visit other cities other than Baghdad?
We stayed in Karada. I wanted to do the marshes so bad. Mm. Like, that was one, because yeah,
I haven't done it yet, and I really want to do it.
And but that's that, we're losing that. Yeah. You know, it's drying up. Yeah. So like, time is against us. Like, I so wanted to visit there, but just, I was there for like a week, And I was Bilal's guest, so I was so like, just going to the shops was enough for me. Like hearing the horns and hearing the feeling the smog and, you know,
loving
walking,
the traffic,
right? Like just like I'm here, I'm in Baghdad. You know, like it was so special. So we didn't do the rounds, but next time.
What were the tastes like out there?
Oh, it was amazing. Turshi, incredible. The Gema was just beyond belief. Like that was Michelin starred level Gema, in my opinion. That would easily be in any Michelin starred restaurant. The quality of that cream, it was just mind blowing.
Nothing else. We have it in Turkey. We have it in a lot of countries, but I don't get the
Gema
taste.
No, that's not.
You don't call that Gema. No. Yeah, you don't get the same taste.
It really, yeah. it just blew me away. Mm. You know, and there was one like area that I felt a bit. I think I was going there expecting like kubba to be ever. You know those home dishes.
Yeah.
But people kind of soon said like, no, they're found in people's homes. Like they're not. Do you know what I mean? It was really like maskouf, qouzi, kebab. That was like their greatest hits. Mm-hmm. And maybe and the Gema places where you go for breakfast.
What about parcha?
I didn't go for parcha. Yeah. I smelt it and that was enough. I just smelt it.
Yeah. Did you not see Kubbar Baghdadiya, the big round ones?
The sarai. Yeah. We went to a place for the sarai. Okay. But again, like the halebs, the potato chap, like, and again, this is another education for me where I was like, oh, okay, so, you know, I know in Mosul, I've got mates who are there, like halebs everywhere. Yeah. You know, haleb, falafel wrap and a can of Coke, like that's their go-to.
Yeah.
So again, it just woke me up to like regional, how rich regionally as well Iraq is for they specialize stuff here, they do stuff here, they do stuff there. And again, like that diaspora of like, you know, you've probably got one auntie who does exceptional dolma and the other one who does exceptional ped de plow or whatever, right? And it's like, it's again this whole thing of like, I'm here eating it in my home thinking this is normal, but it's not. It's actually not actually restaurant fare. This is home, you know? And again, that's what makes it so special as a diaspora, because you can think, okay, this is Iraqi cuisine and like, oh, I'm going to go to Iraq and just eat this in restaurants. Like, no, it wasn't the case. And again, that was a real interesting thing for me. And
I'll tell you a little story about kubba, because in Iraq, you hardly see it in restaurants. It's there as part of starters.
It's a starter.
In some of the restaurants. So this is just, what you were saying just brought back a whole load of memories. And that's what food does, really.
For sure, man.
My grandmother used to cook kubba. And then sometimes they used to pop open and they just become bitsy. Mm. I don't know if it's too much water or what it is, but it just becomes bitsy.
Yeah.
But then she'll whisk up eggs with the kubba after it's dried up and then just put it in the tawa with eggs. And
like an omelet?
Like an omelet with kubba. And I'm like, it was the best egg ever.
Yeah,
you don't see that anywhere
else. No. But that's a dish. That's your dish.
That was my dish. The thing is, she only done it because she says, I know you like eggs. I know you like kubba. Let's just mix the two and see what happens.
Yeah.
And it just worked perfectly for me.
Wow. But it's just like, that's something just, for you to try.
Yeah. That's the brunch menu done.
There you go.
Done. But yeah, it's just food is, it hits people's heart in so many different ways. It gives them so many different memories, so many different flavors. And I guess playing with that and then going out to experience it as well whilst you were out there, I mean, how was your dad's? Did you bring anything back for your dad? Flavors and stuff
course,
like that?
Of course. I brought so much stuff back thinking, you know, to win him over.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, I remember just going to his door and he just gave me the biggest hug. Like, almost like, yeah, just like.
You survived.
Don't be a donkey. Don't do that again. Like, don't give me a heart attack. Like, just sit down and stay there. Be a good boy type thing. But yeah, he survived. But. Yeah, I brought him back loads of stuff and when I spoke about Gema, like I could see in his head, like, he's like, wow, we used to have this for breakfast every day in the army. Like, you know, like you could see his these memories coming for him, and yeah, it was. I think he wasn't. You know, he's one of those guys where he, like, I'd be like talking. He won't want me to know he's listening, but he's listening. So the TV's on, he's like on the, you know, he's watching the TV, but this ear is like locked into me. You know what I mean? Like he's one of those cats where he you know, that's what, cause he's remarried and Grace, I was telling Grace all about, his wife just in my trip there. And, she's got family there. And again, I could just see him like listening, but like he didn't want to listen, but he was listening. Do you know what I mean? One of those. So they're a stubborn lot.
Sounds like your dad is a character.
Oh, he is. Yeah. He's one in a million. Get him on this podcast alone, like, would you, you know, just he'll go viral. Wow. You know what I mean? Like, but yeah, he's a special character.
Amazing. Can I, out of curiosity, I'm just, and you don't have to answer.
My dear,
fine.
Ask me anything.
Thank
ask
you.
Me anything.
What was the hardest conversation you've had with your father? Was it you going into the food industry, or was it the fact that you wanted to go to Iraq? Which one was harder?
Probably me telling him that I'm dating a non-Christian.
So you're not even related.
They're the worst conversations. He'd lose his head. But no, I think Iraq.
Really?
Yeah, I think Iraq was tougher because I think he kind of knows me. Like I don't mess about. I've got work ethic, you know. So yeah, like me and my brother have been brought up to graft since, you know, we were 16. It was like, you get a Saturday job. Oh, you want those pair of trainers? Like, yeah, you save and you buy them. Like, it's not going to be a given. So we had that in us from early, but. Yeah, I think Iraq was tough for him because, you know, again, for reasons explained, it was his son doing the opposite of what he done everything to avoid.
Mm-hmm. And since you came back, did he say, you know what, maybe I'd like to go?
No.
Oh, no.
So no.
That's a no-no subject.
100% no.
And you going back is a no-no?
Yeah, like I'm
is it a no-no subject about you go back, or is it just a
I don't care. I'm so comfortable and confident now of, like, I've seen it now.
Yeah,
it isn't this unknown, like, oh, I'm gonna get kidnapped. I'm, you know, all these like little stories you hear when you're like in the build-up to it, like all of this stuff that you're hearing from other people, and it's I felt so comfortable there. I felt great, and do you know what I mean? I've got conviction now to take him on in a conversation if he does kick off, and you know, I'd feel comfortable and confident to just, yeah, I'm going. That's it.
What would be the main reason why you went back?
I think explore more. I wanted to do more sort of so bad. Obviously, marshes. You know, like, yeah. I want to do south. I want to do the north. Like,
any particular flavors that you want to go try and taste?
Obviously, like kubbas, all the kubbas that, you know, all of that, and I think just understanding as well, like when it comes to game, I like the whole marshes, water buffaloes, the process. You know, man, if that gets lost, like it'd just be awful. But
hopefully it won't.
Yeah, inshallah it won't. But it's just, again, these type of things I'd love to see. And again, the first time you're overthinking. Mm. It's like, it's just sensory overload. Yeah.
Yes.
That first trip. So it's like the second one, I'll be so much more calm and I probably could absorb more. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Like it was just so like, I'm in Baghdad, like every 5 minutes. Oh my God, I'm here. And it's
pinch
like,
me.
It's like, shut up, Philip. Like, focus.
You know what I mean? See what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. But that, like, again, that trip of like what I shared on my stories on social media, that was, I wasn't ready for what that trip did for people. You know, they lived vicariously through my stories and the emotions, the messages of what just a photo did to people. Just
really?
Oh, mate.
What comments were you like getting?
Dude, just like, oh, you've just gone past the street I used to walk down 40 years ago. That was, I used to walk to school down that street. Oh my God, thank you so much for sharing the picture of the church. My sister got murdered when the attack happened and they mowed everyone down with machine. Like, mate, what do I say to that? Like, beyond emotional, beyond like heartfelt. And it was just, yeah. Chaldeans, you know, I remember taking a photo of a Chaldean church. The amount of Chaldeans that messaged me, thank you so much. Like, we're forgotten. We're not even a religion, a race. You know, like, again, like, so it was an education for me, you know. And similar to like what we shared off air, like, oh, my uncle owns that shop.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's four generations. That's my auntie. You know, like, I'm like, oh, wow. You know, and again, like, the media in the West, they dehumanize us. You know, they make out it's like there's no face or story behind any of it. And it was just, again, just such a reminder for me of like, this is real. This is real.
And Iraq has such a rich history.
Oh, man.
We do, don't we? But it's forgotten. And I remember growing up here, right? We always learned about the... There's something I want to bring up. We've always learned about the Romans, the Greeks, the Egyptian, the pharaohs and all of that. Nothing ever mentioned about Mesopotamia. Yet you go to the British Museum
half of it's there.
The amount of, you half know, of wealth. It's there. Yeah, it's there. It's all there. And, you know, and it's really upsetting because you're in a Christian country. And in the Old Testament, in the book of Genesis, they talk about the Tower of Babel,
yeah.
And they talk about Nimrud. And this is all Iraq. This is all to do with Iraq, right? But none of it is mentioned. None of it is taught in schools. And I, growing up here, I've always kept away from saying I'm Iraqi because of the first Gulf War. But as I got older and I started reading the Bible and started reading other books and thinking, hold on a minute. All of this is there. They should know all of this. But I wasn't taught. I was told that Iraqi, you're a terrorist. Full stop. You're the bad one. You're the one that's gone to Kuwait and killed everyone. Even kids used to say that my dad was Saddam Hussein at some point during the 90s.
But this is what you've got to think about now. But I think what you're saying is 100% right. But then Iraq was the best country in the world when it was fighting Iran. And the minute that changed and it fought Kuwait, it just became, oh, you're now the enemy.
But you say that, but Iraq was never on the map. Like, people here don't know Iraq. I mean, I'm sure when your father came in the 70s, if he told people he's from Iraq, they're all okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nobody knows about the religion. Nobody knows the religions, I should say. We've got so many religions in Iraq.
And we were very multicultural in Iraq.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
there were so many different religions. I mean, I speak to my uncles and they're like, oh, my neighbor was a Christian. The guy across the road was a Jew. And it was just like, we never had segregation or anything. You know, it's like Fridays, we all go out, have fun together. And it was.
Yeah, no one identified as you're this, you're that. No, Same in like the stories you're hearing now coming out of Palestine. Everyone just rolled. Everyone just got along, you know,
something happened where it became divide and conquer. And it just divided these communities up, saying this city is better than that city. So then these two cities started hating each other and that community started hating that community and let's divide them.
Yeah, and that's what the media does, I think. It wipes out the good and just brings out whatever they want us, you know, the narrative that they want us to embrace. So yeah,
and that's a big concern for me with what's going on in Palestine right now with Israel and that divide and conquer strategy. I think that's coming because I think we're so united at the moment as an Arab race with what's going on with the Palestinians. Everyone can see just how messed up it is, you know, it's beyond words. And I feel like, yeah, there's going to be a big divide and conquer strategy coming, I feel, for all of us to again just split us up because we're less powerful when we're together, right? When we're split up, it's like it's easy to pick us off. So, and I think there's such a unite. You know, there's not on a government level, but on a people level, everyone, you know, we've been here before. What's going on in Palestine? Like, our elders have been here before. And it's funny, like, I do talk to my dad about it. And it's just like, yeah, he just sighs. Like, yeah, what can we do? Mm. Like, we've been, you know, we've experienced it. Like, and it's like, fuck, man, like, sorry to swear. But, yeah, I digress. But anyway, it's something to be proud of when it is a community and it's strong and, you know, we're together and united.
Yeah.
What it once was.
Hopefully
It will be again.
It will be again. And sure. I have big hopes for Iraq. I think Iraq is going to do really, really well. And it's up to us, right?
Yeah.
So, and the younger generation to really, really give Iraq a voice.
Mm-mm-mm, for sure.
So I want to take you back. You said you went, first time you went to Iraq, you were 1 year old.
Yes.
So what happened there?
So it's crazy because I got back for this, the most recent trip, I got back, and my whole life I had it through photos and other sort of sources that it was a family trip. Mm-hmm. My mum, my dad, me and my bro. I'm one, my brother's three at the time.
Oh, so your dad had gone back then?
And hear me. And so I got back and I was like, because my mum followed my stories as well. And she's like, oh my God, I remember that. And like remember this, remember that. And I remember saying to dad, like, you know, when I was one, like, what was it like getting into the, you know, airport? I asked him some random question and he, you know, he looks at me like in his like snarly face. I won't use the colourful language, but he's like, what are you on about, boy? I didn't go. I was like, what? I was like, he's like, yeah, I didn't go back. Your mother took you.
Oh.
So I was like, hold on a minute. Like, and I'm now 38 years of age finding this out for the first time. I was like, mum took me and Matt to Iraq on her own. He's like, yeah. You know, like, what's the big deal? I was just shut him out. I was like, call my mum. I was like, mum, like, I've just found out that like that trip, it was just us three. She was like, yeah, didn't you know that? I was like, no, I didn't. And we just had this like long conversation and yeah, like it was just...
What year was this?
This was 85.
Okay.
Oh.
So this was 85. So
Iraq-Iran war was going on.
It kicked off. My mum said it kicked off like 2 weeks before she left.
Okay. And how long were you out there for?
So what was beautiful was my mum went out there scared, nervous, but the Irish in her was like, I was like, mum, why did you do that? She's like, I couldn't not have your dad's mum not meet you.
Wow.
You know, no, real, like just, yeah. So beyond heartwarming. So my mum's like, I'm taking you to visit your dad's mum. Like this is how it is. And like, you know, it was so lovely. My mum smiles when she talks about that period because she extended her trip. She loved it that much. And the family took her in and she's meeting like people for the first time, some of them. And she just had the best time. Went to see the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. Did so many of the sites when it was probably in its good days. And yeah, I think extended her trip by 3 weeks. Didn't want to come home. Kept dad at home. You know what I mean? Like she was getting fed by the Juma gang. So, and again, like just wow, you know, wow. You know, that she did that. And again, back then, like probably like, and I said, cause obviously I'm really close.
How did that make your dad feel that she went without him and took you guys?
My dad was just kind of, my dad's like, just does his thing.
Okay.
Swear like black sheep, just lone wolf. Just
Ofone.
Yeah. Like, I think it was just, I'd obviously like, made really special because he's tight with his sisters and like my aunties, just my cheeks were like bleeding by the end, like just just all the squeezing and all of that probably. But yeah, like and again, I think for my mum who's not from that world to receive that level of love and warmth and welcome, you know, it was just beyond special for her. And And to this day, like, they still ask, they all ask after my mum, like all my aunties, everyone, how's your mum? How's your mum?
That's so lovely.
Yeah, it's really special. Yeah, she, because she is special. But yeah, it was, I was shocked. Well, that's just like when I found out that mum did that on her own, like, I was like, wow. And I remember her dad, my granddad, you know, he was, you know, find out where the embassy is. Like, when you land, like, make sure you know where you're da, 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 da. And it was just like, yeah, it was just funny. Funny to like look back then and think like, what must that been like for my mum's mum and dad? You know, but yeah, she has fond memories.
That's beautiful.
That is lovely. That is very heartwarming.
Yeah, no.
Yes, and your mom is very special.
She is.
To be able to do that on her own with two boys.
Yeah.
Country, a foreign country, a country.
To a family that she doesn't really know.
Yeah. It was really alien for her. Yeah.
So what's the next big thing for?
This year's been crazy. Like, this year's just been a bit of a weird year for me. So I really...
Can I ask why?
Oh, just I've got off camera, I'm on crutches. I've got a broken knee that I'm nursing. So I've been out of action for the last 2 months and probably won't be in action for at least another month. And before that, there was just a lot going on with the business and the hacking and all of that happened. And just, I think everything that has gone on since October 7th, I don't think any of us have been the same. And when you sort of see what's going on a social media level, what we've witnessed with the images and everything that's happened, it's quite hard to just be like, all right, let's do a recipe. Let's promote Juma. Like, it's been such a mind F, and it's yeah, it's just been a weird year. And I say this with a business hat on, like a not a personal thing, like a, you know. And I want next year to just be a lot more kind of, I don't know, I want it to be a lot more fun, a lot more enjoyable, and a lot more, if it can be, with the obviously the darkness going on in the world, but like a lot more in touch with just our roots and the importance of voicing Iraqi culture during this period that we're witnessing, you know.
Why Iraqi culture?
Because Netanyahu thinks we're the curse, and he's fucking putting that on in front of the United Nations, unapologetically saying, Iraq, Iran, Syria is the curse. Like, what? We can't have that.
But beyond that, there's something else for you. The connection that you have to Iraq, I guess.
Yeah, but sorry, I say that answer like flippantly, but there's work to be done. There's work to be done, and I have some form of platform in a very commercial area of Borough Market where it's like I've got angles here to, and I've got a hand to play, and I want to leverage that. And it's hard because I get lost in it all, because it is just kind of like, well, you know, the other day we just announced a pop-up and a fundraiser for the Dr. Hassan's Foundation, Children's Foundation. And even that, sometimes you post it, you're like, I just feel so helpless. What, we're going to raise some money? Like, is that, you know, like your mind just, you stops you even doing anything. But then what I say to myself is like, yalla, move forward, like go forward. So like, that's why I say this year, I feel as though I haven't really like, yeah, just quite a lot of things have just happened that have like knocked me out of sync. And next year, like I feel a lot more like empowered and bold and like ready to like, you know, take on new things. And beyond Borough, to maybe go back to your original question, yeah, we want to open a restaurant one day. We want to. You guys lighting up. We want to do that, and you know, I'm quietly looking at things in the background, but I'm in no rush. I'm in no rush because it's a tough.
Can I ask why a restaurant?
I just feel. I feel it's inevitable. It's inevitable. We can't, you know, Borough, for all of its beauty, it's not enough, I don't think, for the community and for us all to. And again, we talk about a safe space. I visualize like a space for all, like not just an Iraqi hangout, but like for everyone, for us to really show off and showcase all the beauty that we have, and that you can do so much in an actual physical space, you know, to do that. And places like Dishoom, and you know, they've done so well at like creating a vibe and energy when you walk in, you know, food aside, like that feeling, they take you somewhere to those, you know, Irani Indian cafes back in the day, and I'd love to do that with Iraq. And yeah, to be continued.
Where do you think you'd?
Nah, chill out. We're not going that far.
You don't want people stalking you, huh?
Like I'd love Soho. I'd love
central sort of.
Yeah, I'd love an area where like we're gonna again like Juma's about not just about the Iraqis. I want to target the non, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to change the narrative through food. So, yeah, places where we're going to get a different demographic as well as a local London crowd and Iraqis. Yeah. Like you lot would be like, come to Wembley, come to...
Oh, no.
People come to Ealing. I'm like, nah, like, no, I want to go...
Central, I think, will be perfect.
When I come central,
you've got some nice places in central, and it's just like my head's like thinking of locations where I can see Juma, and it's just like okay,
yeah, absolutely.
Let's see.
Well, you have our support.
Thank you.
100%.
Thank you. And
just so that you know as well, Nebet, I think probably picked up on it. I was asking why three times.
Yes.
So what we have, there's a reason to the madness.
There is a reason.
So we have a thing where we, the last guest asked the next guest a question. So our last guest said, you have to ask him three times why, and then just keep on digging to get the person thinking. And that's what he does. Mm. He gets people thinking about what they do and why they do it. So that's why I was asking why three times. Now, you don't know who our next guest is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
What type of question would you like to ask?
What type of question?
What question would you like to ask?
If they're not in the room and their best friends are saying bad things about them, what are their friends saying?
Wow.
All would go good. That threw you. Yeah, if they're not in the room and their best friends are talking about them, what are the good things that they're saying and what are the bad things that they're saying?
Interesting.
That's interesting.
That's an interesting question.
How would you answer that?
My friends would probably, good, I'd say loyal, committed, solid. And then bad, I'd say... Doesn't get back to like people on communication. Sometimes I get a bit lost in the WhatsApp world. Maybe doesn't like can be too trusting, and that can be definitely to my detriment. And maybe overcommitting to certain things. Overcommit.
Interesting.
Say those.
Well, overcommitting, you've committed really well to Jamal Kitchen. And you've made a success out of it. So well done to that. So it's not all bad.
Thank you.
We didn't talk about your childhood. What were you like as a child?
Childhood, well, mum and dad divorced early. So when I was 6, 8 years old, I was living with mum. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I used to see dad once a week. And that was the setup pretty much till mid-20s. Dad every Wednesday and then mum the rest of the time. I had an incredible childhood that was very simple. Like, I used to spend so much time with my nan and granddad on my mum's side, who were like really special people in my life that had such a profound impact on who Philip, you see, like who he is today. Like, they were my second parents, and incredibly like kind. My nana, where the Irish side comes from. Yeah, just like learned so much from them both. And they were 62 years married, you know, death, like
ended, do us part.
Right. Mm-hmm. And ended that 62 years. It would have been probably 70 if they both stayed with it. And both led like really long lives. Nana passed at 99. They both made it past 90. And like my childhood was like, there was a lot of love there. You know, like a lot of love. And being brought up by my mum, who is again like just such a considerate, caring woman, I learned a lot about compassion and giving and it wasn't, you know, it was simple. Like my childhood was simple. It wasn't like we were going abroad or any of that stuff. It was just nan and granddad's for the whole 7-week summer holiday and then back to school. Half term, nan and granddad's. And that would be filled with just activities, sport, being outdoors, you know, like my granddad's old school, like no TV during the day. Like we would be out active. And like, you know, those things are getting lost nowadays, you know, in a digital world. And I'm so grateful I had that. And yeah, like what's nice is like, as me and my brother are older now and mum is, you know, in retirement, it's just nice to give back. Like, it's nice to just take mum out and not even have to think about maybe financial, you know, things. Whereas my mum had to do that, you know. Yeah. Bless her, she brought us up on her own. And yeah, it's no joke. No, you know, it's no joke. So these things you appreciate more as you get older, you know. And it's lovely to give back. And yeah, I'm really lucky. I'm really lucky. Like, as much as like mum and dad's divorce obviously definitely had an impact on me, and it wasn't nice to see these two, you know, pillars of your life departing. So many aspects of my life it made up for in other ways. And I feel very lucky. Very lucky.
That's lovely. And you said your grandparents are both Irish?
No, granddad was English, Nana was Irish.
Did Nana have an Irish accent?
Yeah, she did.
Did you pick up anything?
She did. She was just like, I didn't really get the twang, but no, she had this real cute, soft Irish accent, and like that would go up an octave when she was angry. The wooden spoon would come out as well. Like old school, we'd be running for cover. But yeah, bless. And my mum, obviously, my mum and her were so close.
That's so beautiful.
You know, so close. And yeah, obviously, the layer cake and the layers of life. My nana, my mum is now the nana to my brother's two nieces. And the cycle continues, you know, and we try and like give the legacy that our elders gave us as best we can, you know.
We're trying.
Yeah.
I just want to ask one last question. If you wanted to leave a legacy through you or Jamal Kitchens, what would your legacy be?
I think like what we were sharing earlier about, you know, you had fear to say your Iraqi, and yeah, I've really witnessed firsthand how one person or one action can bring someone out of their shell. And if yeah, if that's a legacy I'd leave behind, it I'd love it to be that people can be so proud of their identity and their roots, and not get too kind of brainwashed by what the media and other people around them are saying. Like to really, yeah, just be proud and to not be shy about sharing your culture, sharing your traditions, and interesting, it creates a space even for other countries as well that don't feel seen, and the ripple effect continues. So that would be something that would be beyond my dreams to leave behind and to empower the next generation to just, yeah, go for it. And
that's
to,
phenomenal.
You know?
That is phenomenal.
That is beautiful.
I mean, I want to first of all thank you truly from the bottom of my heart for first joining us on today's podcast.
Oh, brother, it's been a pleasure.
You know, telling us and the viewers your story of how Juma Kitchen came about and the challenges that you went through, and obviously the physical challenges this year as well that you've been through. But yeah, no, thank you so much for joining
us. I look forward to this podcast and your project and seeing it all come to life.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for your time as well.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much.